My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert, recording this on Saturday, April 2nd, 2022. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts, give this show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival. Subscribe for $3 a month for hours and hours and hours and hours of bonus content. I usually like to give you at least 2 bonus episodes for the month. I've got some really cool stuff cooking, stuff that you'll never hear from anybody's podcast, anybody's Patreon. It's going to be cool. I'm excited. I found the things. Actually, my mother found what I needed to make the thing happen. And I was like, yes. And I got to order this thing. And then I'm going to start doing the thing that I was telling you about over on Patreon. As soon as I get that squared away, I'm going to make the announcement. So I'm super excited. You'll get to hear me in a way that you've never heard me before. So that'll be pretty freaking cool, and I'm excited to share that with you when the time comes. This is episode 565. There's no guest. It's just me sitting in a hotel in beautiful Atlantic City, New Jersey, at the Borgata Resort and Casino. I had a show last night. It's the first of three. So 2 more shows left. We're off tonight. And we're off tonight because the legendary comedian Chris Rock is performing in the Event Center, and I got a ticket. Now, a week ago, when I woke up on Sunday morning, Oscar Sunday, I just was going through my phone, looking at social media, and saw that he's going to be at Atlantic City. I was like, oh, okay, that's why we have an off night. So I was like, I need to make that happen. I need to see Chris Rock. And I started looking at how much the tickets were. I was like, oh, okay. And I said, I got a little change that I could spare to see a legendary comedian. I had seen him live, I want to say 2015 or something like that, when he was... before he hosted the Oscars. So it's probably before he hosted the Oscars. And I know he was just like working on stuff, and he was at the Stress Factory, and he was fantastic. And one of the things that I always tell this story, and I probably told this story on the show before, but just looking at the way that he looked, because the Stress Factory is probably one of my favorite places to perform, to do comedy. It's one of the Bananas Comedy Club and the Stress Factory, to me, are two of the best clubs in New Jersey by far. And that energy in that room is great. So when it's sold out and it's packed, it's awesome. And Chris Rock, like, for somebody to be as accomplished and famous, and he has all these, he's platinumed comedy, basically. If we're talking video game like achieving his level of fame and accolades in comedy. It's like when you platinum a video game. Like when I platinum The Last of Us, The Last of Us Part Two. That was a proud moment for me. So Chris Rock's done that, and for him to just have all that success and just the fire, he had that look in his eyes, that fire in his eyes. And I went to the first show. It was like a 7 o'clock show or something like that. And he had this fire in his eyes. That he was like, and he said it, and he said on stage, he's like, I still got some jokes, but they had to turn the room over so for the next show. So we had to get the fuck out of there, and he had to end the show. But to see that in him was just fucking great. And it's the same energy that I saw Jason Kidd when he was towards the end of his career in a preseason game. He was defending somebody, and he was like, just in it, just locked in. So I'm super excited to see Chris Rock tonight. I know everybody's had their take on the whole the situation at the Oscars, and I'll just talk about it a little bit right now. I don't know how long this episode's going to be. I had a couple things that I wanted to talk about, but I needed some time. Amy Schumer needed time. Chris needs time to really process it, and I need time, guys. That was a horrible thing that happened on Sunday. That was really bad. And Chris Rock and Will Smith are two of my showbiz heroes. 'Cause I was at the perfect age to really know about these dudes, really love their work, and just give me something to aspire to even before I really made the commitment to just trying to be in the industry that I'm in at this low level, even at this low rung on the totem pole. I mean, I'm in it, and it's partly because of them. Now, I would also say, this is a thing that I haven't really heard that much of. I don't know if it's with black dudes or if it's with men or if it's just with people in general now, to just like not really be affected by something like that. And everything's relative. I know we're in a war. I know we're in a pandemic, or maybe now in a lot of ways people have been treating it like it's endemic. Maybe now the COVID-19 shots are going to be like getting the flu shots. I know that they just opened up the getting a third dose for people who are 50 and over. And I will get a shot again if I can. As soon as when my connect comes through, I'm going to get that other shot because I want to be in the world. I want to make money, and I want to be a functional member of society in a way that I hadn't been in the last 2 years. Anyway, we know there's a war going on, all that stuff. But this made me sad. I had trouble sleeping Sunday night. Will Smith, I love the Fresh Prince. He was one of the DJ. He's a DJ. I'm the rapper. Rock the house. I think for me, it started with Code Red, the album where Boom Shake the Room was on. And I think like that, I was boom. Like, let me see, DJ Jazzy Jeff. Let's just do. You know what? Let's just deep dive. Let's just go back. You guys aren't doing anything. Y'all ain't doing nothing. Y'all listening to this. You're in your car. You're in your cubicle or whatever you're doing. I want to look at the discography. So I think for me, so Code Red was the last project that Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince did. So I remember Summertime. I remember I Think I Could Beat Mike Tyson. All that. I remember Girls Ain't Nothing But Trouble. Parents Just Don't Understand. I ended up just kind of going back because I was 13. So that's when I started to have like an allowance. I think I was cutting grass and I could buy music and stuff. That was my thing. Like it was when I was a kid, it was like football, baseball, basketball cards and music. And it got to a point where I think I was like 14 or 15. My parents were like, you can't buy any more CDs. You're buying too much, you know, all that stuff. So I remember getting that and just going back and back into their catalog and remembering the raps and even the obscure raps. Like what was the name of that record? Get Hyped. It was a B-side. And I still remember, like, the George of the Jungle, watch out for that tree. If you're an MC, watch out for me. And my man Jazzy, just hit me. Beat back in. Ain't no slacking. I'm unbeatable, undefeatable. I keep the flow way, way up tempo. But now you must know that I got guts. So don't be chuckling or else we knuckling. When I get in my karma seatbelt, I'm buckling. And ain't that I'm afraid, but I'm trying to get paid from a hospital bed. Ain't no money to be made. Mary had a little lamb and her fleece was white as snow. But I'm Hannibal Lecter. I silenced the lamb, but not the crowd. Yo, who knows that song? Who knows that record? Me. I still know it. That came out in 1992. I'm 42 years old now. I didn't know that I was going to talk about that. I am a Will Smith fan for as long as I can remember. Monday nights when the Fresh Prince was on, I was in front of the TV. Was my father, Aubrey Lambert, my hero? You're motherfucking right, he was. But I loved, my dad couldn't rap. My dad couldn't rap. He wasn't an actor. And I grew up really enjoying these dudes. I really enjoyed Will Smith, Chris Rock. Chris Rock, I remember Saturday Night Live. I thought Saturday Night Live. I always watched SNL. And I remember he was on there, Nat X. He had a few characters, but it wasn't until Bring the Pain in 1996, I want to say, that he really just, because I remember doing some shitty talent show where I was going to sing Ribbon in the Sky, not Rhythm in, oh my God, where I was going to sing Ribbon in the Sky, and I got bumped or I didn't go on. It was some shitty talent show that I don't want to name names. It was a shitty talent show. And I was doing it because I was trying. No, I'm not going to. Anyway, shitty talent show. And I didn't get to perform. Me and my dad were. My dad took me. And it was just a fucking weird event. I wish my dad. See, this is like, I wish I could ask my dad about this. But it was just a really shitty event. And I remember that night, that's when Chris Rock's Bring the Pain was coming out. And I remember going back. I think I set the timer to record it. I recorded it and just watched it all the time. But before Bring the Pain, there was Big Ass Jokes. And Big Ass Jokes had that bit, fucking around with them white boys, like Debbie Thomas, dating a white guy. She went to the Olympics, busted her ass, fucking around with them white boys. When did Big Ass Jokes come out? 1994. So 2 years prior. I just remember just like, wow. Cause when I was a kid, I loved comedy, stand up comedy back then. And like legendary icon. And you know, some people's, and I'm going to say that I'm putting it all out there. Cause I do really love and respect these dudes for their accomplishments and their talents. I don't know if that's like if it's a guy, like I was saying earlier, if it's a guy thing to not really want to give it up to another dude that's good at something and that you admire, I don't know what that is. It seems like that's been lost or certain things don't affect people anymore. That these people had an effect on your life. I mean, I think I saw it when I watched that DMX documentary that they did on HBO, how people really like loved him, and he seemed like a sweet guy. This is another sweet guy that was troubled, and I, you know, read Will Smith's book, and then I care about the Oscars. I like them. You know me, for years we have these round tables where I talk about the Oscars with Jeff and JL, and a wonderful addition of having Veronica Paredes, Dr. P, on the show and getting to just discuss movies with people that I enjoy talking in movies, you know, and we have Tim Hall on the show and we talk about movies and stuff like that. The Oscars, man, like the ceremony itself, I could take it or leave it, really, to be honest with you. So that Sunday, I was, you know, one of my buddies from the play was texting me, "Oh, I'm just thinking about you, man, about the Oscars and blah blah blah." He's like, "Yeah, I think I'm gonna record it and then just watch it on a delay." And that's kind of the thing that Bill Burr used to talk about when he would watch the Super Bowl, so you could fast forward through the commercials and just, you know, focus on the game if that's what you were into. And I was like, "Yeah, that's a good idea. I might do that." And then one of my friends that day, I was talking to one of my homies, one of my friends in the industry, and he was like, he sent me the screeners for Bust Down, this NBC Peacock show. And I was like, "You know what? I'm going to watch Bust Down on my laptop and just have the Oscars on mute." And so I saw Beyonce killed it. And then, you know, Regina Hall, Amy Schumer, Wanda Sykes did their thing. They killed it. And then Ariana DeBose wins for Best Supporting Actress. And I'm like, bet, knew that was going to happen, predicted that, happy for her. She had a great speech. And then I just kind of was like going in and out, pausing Bust Down whenever something I wanted to see was on there. And then it got to, you know, Chris Rock came out. I was like, "Oh, shit, Chris Rock." And was going to do the Best Documentary. And I'm watching it. He tells his jokes. And, you know, he takes a dig at Jada and Will. You know, he starts out with Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz, like, all in fun, all in jest. I was like, "Oh, cool, that's funny, yeah, yeah." And then the Jada, the G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it. Harmless joke. And then Will Smith goes up there and hits him. And I'm thinking, like, the way that the camera angle was and the way that the mic, the lav got hit or something, it was just weird. And I rewound it. The sound went out. And I'm like, "What's going on?" And my homies are texting me. I'm like, what is this? And then somebody, my homie, it hits me with the Japanese unedited footage, and he slapped Chris Rock, and Will Smith just slapped the shit out of me. Will Smith said, "Keep your wife's name out your fucking mouth," and yelling and all this shit. And I was like, "Wow, so he really did. So it's not a bit." And then one of my coworkers, who knows that I love movies, he takes, "Yo, what's going on?" And blah, it was crazy. We find that it wasn't a bit. It was just bad all around, man. I don't think Chris Rock deserved to get hit for telling an innocuous joke, G.I. Jane 2. I don't know if he knew that Jada Pinkett had alopecia. I didn't know either. I just know that I just was just looking at Jada like, she cut her hair. She's beautiful with hair. She's beautiful without. Let me tell you about Jada Pinkett. Jada Pinkett is fine as hell. Always been fine. She's always been like one of those. How old is Jada Pinkett? Because I remember A Different World, having a crush on her. How old is she? She's 50 years old. Gorgeous. I didn't know anything about Red Table Talk until they had that Will Smith went to the table. And that's the only thing I watched. I didn't know about the alopecia. Alopecia or not, if she shaved her head, she's fucking gorgeous. And so and G.I. Jane, that was like, to me, when I think about G.I. Jane, I don't even remember if I saw it. But I just remember Demi Moore cut her hair. Like, and that was a big thing because Demi Moore is hot, beautiful actress. She cuts her hair to do this like gritty movie or whatever. And she seemed, I believe she's the heroine of that movie. And I think, shit, if Jada Pinkett did G.I. Jane, you know, she'd have an audience that would watch that. I'd probably watch the shit. So I didn't think anything of it, but, you know, Will laughed. And then Jada kind of gave a side eye, like kind of rolled her eyes or whatever. And it just be like, "Yo, okay, that's a joke that she didn't like." And then Chris was like, "Ah," and Will slaps him. It was uncalled for. You don't do that. I was thinking, if I was offended, if I were Will Smith, Jada Pinkett was my, and Jada Pinkett's my wife, she doesn't like the joke. I clock it. I win the award. I do say my speech. At the after party, I take Chris Rock to the side. Yo, keep your wife's name out your fucking mouth. How many times have we had to do this? What's good, dog? Can you please stop doing this? I'm asking you nice. The second time ain't gonna be as nice. That's it, dog. That's it. And it could have, even if he did slap him at the party or something, it would have been a lot less. He ruined that night for all of those people that worked so hard to get to that level in the industry. And I know what it's like. I tell you on this show, if it's, this may not be the best podcast, this may not be the hottest podcast in these streets, but if I don't do anything more in my career, I was on fucking Broadway. I was in an Oscar nominated film. Small parts in both each of those things. And the Lehman trilogy will become Tony nominated, will probably win something. I probably won't be for anything I did, but I will be associated with that. And I know how hard it is. If you've listened to this show, if anything is the diary, especially with these solo episodes, it's an audio log of somebody trying to get it out the mud, trying to achieve success out the mud, not knowing anybody famous. Well, that's not true. There's some people that I knew that could have helped my career, but didn't. And there's some people that were like along the way that I met that could have helped, but didn't for whatever reason. And I'm not trying to be bitter. I'm not trying to turn this into an episode of The Righteous Prick. Shout out to the man JL Covan. No, but there are things that could have worked in certain ways where I would be talking to you in a palatial estate. There's, you know, it's different. There's certain things that I won't share on the air that, you know, that I'll keep to myself and keep to conversations with friends and everything. But I just, you think of the journey, because I put myself in the situation of those people because I've been through it. Like I think I talked about this on the podcast. When the show, when the Lehman Trilogy opened, I remember crying. That night, October 14th, the show opened. That late morning, early afternoon, I was on the phone with my parents, crying and expressing gratitude for everything that they did to get me to the point where I'm in New York City. I am on Broadway from a kid that was that in junior high was afraid but wanted to be on stage. Like I remember this audition that I did for The King and I, and they were it was in talks for me to be like Anna's son, Lewis, like the lead woman's son. And I was kind of, I was afraid because I didn't think I could do it. Like, I feel like I've kind of felt like I respected it too much and I was afraid. And I don't know. I was just like eventually played the king's servant that had a couple lines, but I could have did that part. And I just regret that I didn't do that. But like, I don't know, from just being that scared kid to being somebody that through, I don't know, determination, talent, luck, help to get to that point, to share the stage with like these immensely talented actors who have their own story of how they got to that point. So to imagine, I can easily put myself in the position of those people, because there's so many people. For every Will Smith, for every Chris Rock, for every Ariana DeBose, for every Questlove, there's somebody that helped get them there, that it was in the crew, was craft services, makeup department, hair department, research, all these people on this special night where people try to shit on it. And you have people that, you know, are apathetic about it, or, you know, will want to have their opinions about show business and things like that. There's a lot of good people, despite all the bullshit that you hear. There's a lot of good people that you don't, that are in the credits after the movie you see with all the stars on the screen, who make that thing happen. And that's a night. Yeah, you say, oh, rich people are just congratulating rich people with trophies. But it means something. It means something. It means that, oh, I was associated with this film. I did hair and makeup on this Oscar-winning film. I can get another job somewhere easier. It would be easier for me to get another job working because I was associated with this film. I worked on this film. I did the lighting for this. I did the sound. I did, you know, whatever for, you know, they don't call it an industry for nothing. And it's just something that I've always knew. And you've heard me talk about it recently within the last, you know, 5 or 6 years since I've really been entrenched in the union and really been working a lot of these union gigs and stuff. But that was ruined by Will. And it's not Chris's fault. People say, oh, it goes back to 2016 when he said, yeah, I watched that. That's not that bad. He's talking about boycotting. It's like, well, Jada, you know, nobody invited you. It's like me. And he shitted on himself when talking about him not being able to get with Rihanna. He wasn't invited, you know? I don't know. Will and Chris have supposedly been friends or known each other for years. So who knows what that was. But it shouldn't have prompted that. It shouldn't have prompted a slap. I didn't know what I was going to say when I was talking about this, but just reading Will Smith's book, it's, now having said all that, it was wrong. And that was, you know, that had to be trauma from his childhood that he was dealing with. But you think about on that night, on the biggest night of his career, where he just becomes unhinged and goes and does that. And it was something that I was talking to the homie Rick Younger yesterday on the way here to Atlantic City. And he was telling me about this thing called the upper limit problem. And I guess it's from this guy named Gay Hendricks. This wonderful book called I'm just going to read you this blurb that the homie Randolph actually sent to me. And we were talking about, Randolph and I were talking about this. So it's two of my OGs mentioned the same book. So now I got to read it. But I'll just read from this. This is Christine Northrup. Is it Northrup? And Christine Northrup, MD. I'll read you this blurb here, and I'll just try to fact check if I'm just to make sure. Hold on. But I'm going to read you this blurb. Do you ever worry about what people think of you? Do you blame or criticize others? Do you engage in negative self-talk? If so, you are not alone. And according to my friend and colleague, Gay Hendricks, you may have what he calls an upper limit problem. In his wonderful book, The Big Leap, Gay talks about upper limit problems, or how we sabotage ourselves when we've reached success. For example, you achieve huge accolades from your boss for your work on an important project, but then you mess up terribly on your next project and are passed over for the promotion. Perhaps you save your vacation days and plan your dream vacation only to get sick for your departure date. Maybe you pick fights with loved ones when everything is going well between you, or you finally lose that last 5 pounds, then go on a chocolate binge and gain it all back. Aye, nigh. Does this sound familiar? If so, you have an upper limit problem. And The Big Leap, I guess it's from The Big Leap by Gay Hendrix. So I guess that's what this is. So I need to check this out. But I've felt that way in certain aspects of my life. And I'm currently faced with an audition that I have to work on this weekend that I'm afraid of. But usually the thing, and I just mentioned that when I was a kid, that's why I mentioned that when I was in seventh grade, like I feared being in the spotlight in that way. I thought I could just be like in the background and I get to go to Busch Gardens. Like, I know I've told this story. Where I really got into acting was because I was at a new school, and if you were in the drama club, you were in the school play, the spring musical, you got to go to Busch Gardens at the end of the year. And I had never gone to Busch Gardens before, and I wanted to do that. So that was my end. But then I just got hooked. And I was talking to my manager about I don't know how much I'll talk. Maybe, man, because I might talk about the shit on Three Guys. I don't know. There's an audition that my manager, he's always trying to get me to sign up for musicals, and not sign up for, but get me these auditions for musicals, because it's like, it's good money. It's really good money. And sometimes I don't see myself in those. Now, I can sing. I have the talent to sing and everything like that, but I respect it a lot. And there's this kind of reverence that I have that I don't see myself doing, and I hadn't done it in a long time. And I just don't see myself in that way. And we were talking on the phone, and I think I was in the middle of like working on something or like doing some kind of family business stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, go ahead, just submit me. And I'm just thinking to myself, no, I'm probably not going to get seen for that anyway. And then he calls me on Thursday. I'm working from home. I'm at my mom's, and he's like, you got a lot of work in front of you. And say, you got an audition. So you got to work on these songs. And I was like, oh shit. And I was afraid. I was like, oh fuck. Now I have to do the work. And there, so I have to do it. And I started listening to the music. I started watching the thing, and I'm just like, I think I can do this. Fuck it. It's Hamilton, the touring thing. It kind of feels like a long shot, but in from poet laureate Fonte Coleman of the Foreign Exchange and Little Brother, what's a long shot to a sharpshooter? It feels like it's a long shot, but then I started listening to the music and I said, I think I can put something together here. I think I can put something together. Even if I don't get cast in this thing, it's a litmus test for me. It's almost like that Michael Jordan shit. It's like, so my manager will understand what I can do, what I'm capable of, and to see that I'm capable of it too, to turn in a, I wouldn't say a serviceable tape, but one that's like, oh shit, okay, he's got that in his toolbox too. So that's what it is. Cat's out of the bag. I'm auditioning for Hamilton, the touring company, and it's good money. It's really good money. We'll see what happens, but I need the exercise of this. I think more than I do the actual job. The job would be fantastic, but I think I need this at this time in my life, and for me to turn it down would not be good. It would not be a good. Um, it wouldn't be good for my character and just personally, and then for what my father worked so hard for. So it's like I gotta dig in and do it. And it's something that I don't know if it's fear. There is a fear. There is that upper limit issue, I guess. That fear of wanting to, that fear of success. I think I've had that more than just failing in general. You never try. You don't know unless you try. I go back to this story a lot where I was 26 and I was about a year out of grad school. And I was working. I was a working actor in the city of Chicago. I was non-equity, but I was working and starting to gain respect and a little traction in the community just by working all the time. Before I left, I was in three straight plays. After one closed, I was on to the next one in rehearsals while another show was running. So I was getting that respect. And I was living my dream, I've said this on the show before, but I'll constantly say it till I'm blue in the face. One of the last real conversations that my dad and I had was he asked me if I was happy. And I said, yeah, I said, I am, because everything that I wanted to do when I was a kid, that said that I wanted to do when I was a kid, I'm doing it. It may not be at the level that I want to do it at, but I'm doing it. And it's because of him. And it's because of my mother, because they made it happen. You know, as you hear the homie JL talk about it on his podcast. Sometimes people can say he can be morose and negative about his career, but he understands what his mother did to make it happen for him. And that's what I share with JL. Like, I share a lot. He's a great friend. And that's part of legacy too. That's part of it too. Not only for yourself, but the people that have sacrificed so that you could make decisions that they couldn't make with their lives before. So anyway, 27. There's this play called Blue Orange by Joe Penhall. This is my Al Bundy shit. And I think I did that a year ago when I had Justin and Brandon on, and we did that. It was a great episode too. It was a fantastic episode when we reviewed Pieces of a Woman and Promising Young Woman. Great episode. I got to get them back on the show soon. So this play, Blue Orange by Joe Penhall. Brian Cox did a film version of it. There's these two doctors that in London trying to, at odds with each other, trying to figure out how to treat this black mental patient who thought that oranges were blue and that Idi Amin was his father. And it was a 3-hour play. And it was one act two was basically 20 some odd minutes of two characters just talking. And the main character, the black character, his name was Chris. And he had like paranoid schizophrenia and all this stuff, and it was a big deal. I read the play front to back. I hired a vocal coach to get the accent down, and went in the audition, nailed that shit, booked it. I fucking booked it, bro. And they called me and said, you got the part, decided to work with you, and all that stuff. And I hung up the phone. And I was like, oh, shit. Now the work. Now you have to do the work. And I did the work. I kind of feared that. I remember having just anxiety about that. But it ended up being fantastic. It was one of the most rewarding things I've done in acting in my whole life. And I remember getting like the anxiety about another show that I did. There's this one show, was like one of the first shows that I was going to be like out in the forefront professionally, reviewed. Exonerated was the name of the play. It was about these victims that were on death row and they got off and this stuff. But I think my character might have did my real life character might have did the shit. But anyway, I remember just getting anxiety over that and feeling like, oh, like you complain about not getting stuff. And then when you do, there's like this weird anxiety. I've had that. So I understand this like upper limit problem, is this thing. So maybe I'm supposed to do Three Guys On today. So maybe Randolph will get into it and have Rick on. We'll talk about it. I got to read this book. But I'm just like making this shit about me. But I'm trying to put myself in it. And I think a lot of times people put themselves in some of these situations on a artificial level to say, if that was me, I'd have slapped him back, or I would have did this, I would have did that. I would like to think if I was Will Smith, I would have took him to the side after a party and say, yo, man, what the fuck, man? This has been going on too long. What is going on? And you keep hearing these rumors pop around. You're exchanging in these text threads with people like, oh shit, this happened. Oh shit. But overall, I think it was a horrible thing that Will Smith did. And at this point in time, he resigned from the Academy. I don't know about that. Like, I guess he can't participate in the, I don't know, but it's almost like I'll take myself out before you take me out sort of thing. It's just a bummer all around, man. It sucks. Like, two people that I really dig get caught up in something like that. And Chris Rock's got to live that down for the rest of his life. It's just, it's bad. And I'm going to see him tonight. And I don't, and like he made in a statement, or like he said when he was in Boston a few days ago, saying, you know, like, this is still new. I'm going to process it. I'm going to make it funny. It's going to be serious. I'm going to make it funny. You know, he's going to do the job that he is capable of doing, that he as one of the best comedians who ever lived, is going to do. And it's going to be on his time. So I'm excited to see him tonight, not only after to see how he reacts to after this thing that happened almost a week ago, but just to see a great comedian do his work and to learn, you know. It's like I'm paying $100+ for to kind of audit a class in a lot of ways. And so it's a bummer. I really have a lot of respect for both of those guys, those two. I share that story because maybe you're going through something in your life where you are being put in this position to show what you can do, and maybe you have a fear of that. And you want to stretch yourself. And I want to try to work on being a better version of myself. And it's hard. We're all human. It's just a hard thing, man. And it just goes to show you that no matter how much fame and success and money you have, you're still human and you can still be brought down to earth. And that's essentially what happened on last week. So let's talk about the winners. I think that, I mean, a lot of us were pretty spot on with, especially with the acting awards. There was no surprise in the acting. We knew Will Smith was going to win. We knew that Jessica Chastain was most likely going to win. At least I thought that she was going to come out, because that was a strong performance. And I think that came out, that Eyes of Tammy Faye came out in the early fall, late summer, early fall. And that was just a great performance. And, you know, my only thing was I thought that Andrew Garfield was going to kind of get the Jamie Foxx treatment by, you know, his performance as Jim Baker in that film and the Tick, Tick, Boom performance in Best Supporting Actor. But it didn't. But Troy Troy Kotsur won for Coda, which was not a surprise because he was sweeping the awards. He was winning a lot during award season. Ariana DeBose winning Best Supporting Actor. I think we called that. Here's a situation that always is interesting to me, that it's hard to get a good gauge on as far as like Best Original Screenplay. The Belfast one, and I like that movie. I thought it was good. One of the best lines I've heard about losing a loved one is in that film. Really good coming of age story. There's just a part that I talked about a few weeks ago where I was like, I don't like that line. You're trying to say y'all are infighting, but now you're going to talk about like herb violence in the black community in Harlem. Like, what the fuck? You motherfuckers are killing each other too. Fuck out of here. That's the only thing I didn't like about that movie. Coda won for best adapted screenplay. Was like, go either way. Encanto, best animated feature. Dune won a bunch. Production design, costume design. Cruella won. Cinematography, Dune. Dune is a good looking film. Editing it won. Makeup and hairstyling, Eyes of Tammy Faye. Dune won for sound, visual effects, score. Yeah, Dune won a lot. Shout out to Billie Eilish and Phineas, No Time to Die. I highly recommend the documentary. What's the name of it? It's on Apple TV Plus. Billie Eilish Apple documentary. The World's a Little Blurry. It came out earlier this year. Okay, 2020, earlier last year. The World's a Little Blurry, and it was directed by this guy. I feel like I talked about this before. RJ Cutler, who did this documentary called American High, which was about this school in, it started out on Fox, I think, and ended up on PBS. I think it was about these kids that were in the graduating class of the class of 2000. In the 99-2000 school year, this documentary series tracked the experiences of 14 students at Illinois' Highland Park High School throughout the 1999-2000 school year. Yeah, participants also chronicled their home lives through video diary entries. Really fantastic. I don't know how you get a hold of that, but it ended up being on PBS. I loved it, and he did this film. And it was terrific. I didn't know anything about Billie Eilish. I knew a little bit about that song, but I didn't know much about her. Good. It's good. And he did the Jim Belushi doc too. That's on Showtime. That was also good. He's a good documentary filmmaker. He did this movie called If I Stay with Chloe Grace Moretz. The Oscars, Questlove won for Summer of Soul, which is fantastic. Really stepped on his moment. But to hear Questlove tell it, he said he had meditated before, and you know, he gave a really sweet speech about his mom and dad, and you know, it's a beautiful thing when you get to see these people at this level and they win. Other than the slap, there weren't that many surprises. Coda winning Best Picture was a bit of surprise. For me, it was. I was happy because that movie was terrific to me. Just a sweet film. And I'm a person, you know, recently affected by the death of a parent. Was just like, well, nobody died in that one, but it was just when you talk about dreams a lot, which we do on this type of podcast, and wanting to achieve something and wanting to, you know, get it out of the mud. It's just what's refreshing to really have the people you have in your life that help you in more ways than they know. Like, I got to see the homie Rod a week or two ago, and it was just great. We were just talking, shooting the shit, saying shit that you can't say on a podcast. And just like, oh, how much that like feeds your soul, you know? And I was telling him, and I've told, you know, Randolph and Andy, you know, just like the last 2 years, even prior to the pandemic, it was something that the podcasting community that we have is something that's kind of sustained me mentally for quite some time. And especially in during the 2 years of really being isolated, you know, having the connection with my parents over the phone and everything was great because we did that all the time anyway, but really getting to connect with my peers and people that I really respect has just been a blessing. So yeah, not that much of a surprise with the Oscar. We'll talk about some TV and stuff. So I was talking about Bust Down. I was watching that as I was watching the Oscars. I really liked it. It's only 6 episodes and it's on Peacock, and it's a show that's created by Langston Kerman, Jack Knight, Chris Redd, and Sam Jay. I have met Langston Kerman maybe one or two times. He's one of those dudes like Janelle James who you see them one time, like Janelle, like I've seen her around a couple of times, and then she was just out of here. Like, she's so good on Abbott Elementary that it's ridiculous how good she is on that show. And she's a terrific comic, so it's really good to see. But Langston's like one of those dudes where it's like you kind of see him in the city for a little bit. Then he went to L.A. and he was on Insecure and all this stuff. But just funny. Really in all these like really fun shows. It's kind of in the spirit of like two of my favorite shows. I would say, and I told one of my homies that, you know, Bust Down is good and it's in the spirit of. So I'll read you the blurb here. Let me see. Let's read the Google blurb. An edgy comedy about four friends working at the Diamondback Casino in Gary, Indiana. As they navigate obstacles and opportunities in and out of the workplace, including bosses who violate boundaries, climbing a very short corporate ladder, and witnessing domestic disputes. This series follows Jack, Sam, Chris, and Langston as they live dead-end lives working dead-end jobs in middle America in an exploration of what happens when all of the answers to life's problems are bad ones. Funny, like working class type show, puts me in the mind of The Chi, which is a fantastic show. If you haven't seen it, I don't know if you're hiding under a rock or what, but it used to be on Comedy Central. Now it's on HBO Max. Comedy Central has this really good but weird track record of greenlighting these really solid shows, and then they just get dumped after one or two seasons. And these shows that have this really terrific, grounded, salt-of-the-earth approach at American life that just, they don't know what the fuck to do with it. Rory Scovel, when the pandemic happened, Rory Scovel had a show. Let me see what the name of it is, because that popped up in my head. And I can't remember the show, because it wasn't his name. It was the name of some other guy. I'll know it if I see it. Oh, shit. Let me see. Robbie was a show about an overzealous small town youth basketball coach attempts to step out of his father's shadow and lead his team to glory. Just like these small stories about these people in these small towns. And it's so fucking good. It's 8 episodes. That's good. I guess that's somewhere in the abyss of Paramount Plus or somewhere on Comedy Central, but it's a good show. Detroiters is like that. To me, two of the best comedies of this century are Detroiters and The Chi. Just simple, funny, interesting. And I think Bust Down is in the spirit of that. They only did 6 episodes, but it's funny, it's weird, it's stupid, it's goofy, and it's especially good to see black people doing weird, stupid, and goofy things where the stakes aren't super high. But with the characters, some of the stakes are high to them because it's relative, you know what I mean, to the character. Like one of the best things that I learned from a director's commentary, one of the best things I learned about acting was from the there's something about Mary, director's commentary, when at the end where Ben Stiller's character, he doesn't get, he thinks he's lost his chance with Mary, and he's down walking down the street, he's crying, he's like and one of the Farrelly brothers is saying, like, you know, Ben Stiller's a great actor, you know, he said something like, oh shit, I'm gonna butcher it, but he said something like, the character doesn't know he's in a comedy. Like, Ben Stiller knows he's doing a comedy, but his character doesn't know that. So everything that's happening to this character, it's the end of the world to him. And he's like just crying. He's lost it. So is that's the thing. Like, it's like, I don't know, like this, I'm in this scene. I don't know that it's supposed to be a thriller. You just know that it's the character just knows to his given circumstance, his or her given circumstances. And they're playing the, for trying to get their objectives met. And what happens when those objectives are met? And more importantly, what happens to the character when those objectives are not met, are not, they don't get what they want? How do they react? But yeah, I think Bust Down is really good. Like, there's shows like that small town America stuff that I like, that Midwestern vibe of Detroiters, and The Chi is just like, they're like my castmates fucking loved, and I was the only black dude in that cast, and these like white dudes are like talking, and it's not like they're like making, oh my god, this black show, Chris, I mean, you got, like I said, yeah, the show's really good, and I was telling them, like, there's all, and especially at season one too, there are Chicago actors that I'm that I know of, I may not even be best friends with them, but I know are super talented and are getting this work, where Chicago is just like this great town where you learn your craft. I've said this for years, where you have these super talented people. And I hope that means there's more industry coming there. Yeah, it's just good all around, especially with Fargo, which the great Chris Rock was in. He had a good role in that. So it's good. It's good to see shows like that. And it's good to see, like, people just taking these big cuts, taking these big swings, trying to hit it out of the park. And it seems like that's what they're doing on Bust Down. So I like kind of plowed through. I think I watched 4 episodes that night of the Oscars and maybe finished maybe the second or the fourth, the fifth and sixth one the next day. Yeah. So I recommend Bust Down. And if you haven't seen Detroiters or The Chi, I mean, what are you doing? I mean, I actually bought Detroiters. After having seen it before, I bought it. And it's just something I could throw on if I want to laugh or just to chill. Just a really, really fucking fun show. What else did I want to talk about? I did watch the first 7 episodes of Welcome to Flatch, which is another show in that vein, but it's mainly white people. It's kind of like a take on Parks and Recreation and The Office, like a mockumentary about this small town in Ohio and the denizens of that town. Some of them is just like the main characters. You just wonder, you need to get a fucking job. Like, what are you doing? But it's entertaining. It's got Sean William Scott and Aya Cash are two of the more established actors on the show, and it's solid, but I'll keep watching. I like it. It's solid, but I would recommend, if you haven't seen The Chi and you haven't seen Bust Down, if you watch those first. But I was watching it on Hulu. I was like, oh, this is fine. This is solid. A pleasant show. You'll get a laugh or two out of it. But then you start wondering, some of these people, you should just get a job to these characters. And you wonder if, excuse me, I had to take a sip of water. You wonder if, like, I don't know, but maybe that's some people in this country that are like that. What's the show? Reservoir Dogs? Reservoir what's the show? Bill Burr and Bobby Lee were on it. Because I can't think of the name. I have to look up Bill Burr's IMDb. I thought I just, oh my God. I didn't know that I was going to be talking. Oh my God, Reservoir. Oh my God. Okay. I have to find it. And now the internet's trying to go slow in this freaking hotel. Reservation Dogs. Reservation Dogs about the kids in on the res in Oklahoma. That's another good show. Now, it is, there are funny elements to it, but it almost just rings as, so I've talked about this before. It's called Reservation Dogs, Four Indigenous Teenagers in Rural Oklahoma Steal, Rob, and Save in order to get to the exotic, mysterious, and faraway land of California. It's almost like, it's not as artsy as Atlanta, but it's similar. And I think, and people will not want to, I don't know that people would want to credit this, but especially with FX, with what FX is greenlining, Louis paved the way for shows like Reservation Dogs and Atlanta. And stylistically, I know Woody. I mean, I know Louis borrows a lot from Woody Allen with his filmmaking and stuff. But there are some elements that, like, you know, that he could, they'll let you get a little weird. They let you get a little spiritual, and you know, you just get an artist will take their, you know, just like a variation on a theme. It's not, and I don't want to diminish what, and I'm not saying that I'm diminishing what, like, Atlanta's doing or Reservation Dogs is doing. But I think, like, Louis kind of allowed that in this modern era of TV where you can get a little weird, you can get a little poignant, and it doesn't always have to be a comedy, you know. There can be these dramatic elements in it. There could be a little horror in it. You know, I think that within the last 10 years, I think, you know, Louis has kind of had that imprint. You know what I mean? You know, you can love the artist, but not his faults. And I think Louis is just like, it's different from Bill. All right.
Ooh, boy.
Okay. Let's talk a little music. And then I want to talk about some comedy specials. The Cool Kids, their new album came out a few weeks ago, called the Before Shit Got Weird. I listened to that last week, and cause I was listening to some of it on my way, traveling between Jersey and Maryland. And I was like, okay. I was like, this is cool. Because I first heard of them in 07 when they came out with this EP called The Bake Sale. And they had this song called, I think it was called What Up. Oh, God. Now I'm putting myself into a rabbit hole here that I... They did... It's called The Bake Sale. Hey, yo, what up, man? Yeah, it's called What Up, Man. And so I've known who they were for a while. I've enjoyed their stuff. It's a group that I just need to revisit, you know. And this new album is good, and it's on point. Yeah. So if you like the Cool Kids, you're into that, I recommend it. I recommend that you check it out. There is, like, I was interested in, like, the placement of one of the records where it seemed like it could have been a trailer. And it could have started at the beginning, but instead they put it towards the end, which is like, that was interesting to me. But I don't know. They know better than I do, but it's good. I recommend it. And then for some random reason, I was editing the podcast last week. I was putting stuff together, and this line came in my head from this one song, and it was... Keith Murray, Method Man, and Red Man had this group called Def Squad, and they had this album called El Nino, and there's a line, what is that line? There's a line that Keith Murray had on this one record called Full Cooperation. And Keith Murray starts it all. He says, "Now, first but not least, you will respect Keith. Lay a nigga down like a do-rag and some grease." And that was stuck in my head. That popped in my head for some reason. And I was like, I want to listen to that. And I just listened to it. And I just started listening to the rest of the album. And it was good. I forgot how good it was. It came out on my April 4th. Well, the Full Cooperation came out April 14th, which is my dad's birthday, in 1998. So that song came out 20 years ago. And it was still, it just kind of, so it came out June 30th, 1998. That was the summer I graduated high school. And yeah, that's back in the day where, This was like the time where I was, well, in high school was when, before I started high school, and I've had this conversation with you guys before, it was the Fresh Prince, a lot of West Side hip hop, West Coast hip hop, like Tupac and Snoop and stuff like that, and MC8, Spice One on that Menace to Society soundtrack. The K goes blah, blah. And, you know, Tribe Called Quest. And that was kind of what my vibe was. Other than that, R&B shit. But then when I got to high school, I connected with the other kids. When I got to McNamara, I connected with the other kids, like, with a Tribe Called Quest. Everybody agreed that we loved the Tribe Called Quest. And then they were like, oh, you got to check out Method Man. You got to check out Red Man. You got to check out, like, this hardcore New York hip hop. And it was like Keith Murray, that I remember that record, The Most Beautifulest Thing in the World. That was the title track of his album. Y'all meant the logical niggas is comical, the astronomical, just like I'm coming through like the flu, bombing you, and then bombing in your crew too. With the fugical, mystical, magical, you know how I do. So word attack, skills, and vocabulary. Man, come on, young. Come on, young. Man, that just took me back. And like Keith Murray was that dude. I think he had gotten into some trouble or something. Then I think he did something with cannabis like a few years back. But Keith Murray, man, that was hard. Keith Murray was hard. Not Quincy, but I'm back on the block and not selling crack. What? Yo, man. Oh, my God. The Most Beautifulest Thing in This World, that record, I need to go listen to that when I log off, when I cut the mics off. But yeah, that really took me back. That's that hardcore hip hop. And I loved like that album. I forgot how hard that album was, like that Def Squad joint. And I got to go back and listen. It's weird because if you were to look at me when I was in high school, I looked like a nerd. I think I was a nerd, I guess. I was in the drama club and all that stuff. And I had my friends and stuff like that. But I did have glasses. But to look at my picture in high school in the yearbook, I would look like, I guess, a nerd. But I liked all that music. I was not doing any of that shit. I was listening to Keith Murray, the most beautifulest thing in this world is just like that. And then I was doing fucking the spring musical Pippin. We've got magic to do just for you. We've got miracle plays to play. You know, just doing that shit. But then in my headphones, it was Keith Murray, the Method Man. Oh, my God. All right, so a couple things before we wrap up. After I got done with the show last night, I went to the food court at this resort here, and I got a tuna sandwich with some coleslaw and pickles. And I watched the Gerard Carmichael special, Rothaniel. So I don't know if I like this, the fact that, like, I guess you had to say that in the Variety, all the things before it came out. And he's hosting SNL this weekend and tonight, actually. And, oh, he comes out, he's gay and all that stuff. this is the best I've ever seen him. And I'm not trying to, I thought he was funny and interesting, but it's so fascinating to me that this guy's sitting down the whole time in the Blue Note Jazz Club in the Village, sitting down, red shirt on, sitting down in a chair, spotlight on him. Masterful direction by Bo Burnham. Bo Burnham's a fucking genius, man. Not only is he super talented, but my God. But this special, Gerard Carmichael, the best I've ever seen him. Really good, really funny, really engaged. He felt, and you know, my homies and I were texting, and like, you know, I was like backstage getting ready to go on. They're like, oh, I'm watching the Gerard Carmichael special. It's the best I've ever seen. It's like weird that he's sitting down. And it's just because that's the thing. Like, who the fuck do you think you are and you're special? You're fucking sitting down? What the fuck? This is stand up, bro. What the fuck are you doing, man? Fucking stand up. Shit. Like, who do you think you are? Bill Cosby? And yes, I said it because Bill Cosby himself sitting down in that chair, horrible person, monster, masterful comedian. We didn't know back then. I didn't. Anyway. Best I ever seen him. Funny. The through line, like the way that he opened the show, how he got on stage. Masterful. So good. Very good. Very good special. Way he talked about himself, his family. I think a lot of it's because it's like he after he came out, he feels more free to talk about things. There's still things that he's working with. And there's parts that don't seem fully polished, but in a way it seems all right because of the subject matter that you can see he's still working through. So I kind of give him an out on that. But it was very like one man showy, which I like when it gets into that realm where it becomes reflective, because there's jokes in there. That's funny stuff. And the way that he set it up, and there's parts of it where audience members are talking to him, like asking him questions, but in a respectful way, a way that he set it up where he said, I forget how he said it, but it's in the trailer where he says, you know, we're trying to talk about this. The only way this works is if, you know, we do this as a family and, you know, talk about secrets and all this stuff. And when the revelation comes, it's interesting to see. It's really, really good, man. And I guess the hesitation with his stand-up at the beginning is where it was passable. It was serviceable to get these accolades, to get a TV show, to get these specials. And regardless of what people, you know, you say, oh, I didn't like the guy, this and that. I know people that say that. Some of my friends say that shit. I really liked the TV show more than his stand-up. And he had some good shit in his stand-up, but it just wasn't like, you know, my favorite. But this, I mean, fantastic. When you can dig deep in there and pull some shit out. So I really enjoyed it. It's one that I'll probably go back to. And just the way that it's fucking, it's snowing. He comes in with his coat on and sees his friend, one of his friends gives his friend the coat, hugs her, goes on stage, and boom, right in it. Then there's a scene like a quarter of the way or some halfway through the special where there's a shot of him talking, and then there's snow outside. You can see the snow falling down. It's just like, it's beautiful. Bo Burnham is just, what can't this motherfucker do? God damn. It's just like, two really talented people at work. Same thing that he did with, you know, we're talking about Chris Rock, where that fucking tambourine at the beginning of Tambourine, that Thundercat, nobody move, there's blood on the floor. Mm-mm. And just a shot of Chris Rock in the dressing room, back of his head, all these people talking. He's clearly contemplating something, getting ready to go on stage. It's a good special. It's a solid special. I didn't like I didn't care for the blackout fucking remix. I'm like, no, you didn't need that. tight, but I'm kind of into that tight, like, yo, this personal shit, you're going in, you make, this is an event. You know, it's not just somebody just, oh, like, it's a special because it's in a theater and somebody gave you the money to do it. And you're just going to, like, kind of goof off, like I saw in somebody's special recently. You're just going to just kind of goof off for an hour and you get paid. Some people get paid to do that, but, and it's easy to do that. But when there's work involved, when you can see the craft to it, where it's just like, man, that's a piece of art. And I think that's what this Rothaniel joint is. One of the best specials I've seen, along with the Taylor Tomlinson special, Look at You, which are comics, you know, like, stylistically, you're gonna, like, from somebody like me, like, yeah, I like jokes, but I like when a comic can get on stage and a comedian can get on stage and, like, talk about their life and open up, talk about their fears, talk about, and that's like Taylor Tomlinson. I'm slightly biased because I worked with her a couple times. I don't know her like that. We are not best friends, but what I will say, when people are kind, and I was talking about this with a friend, like, we were talking about what kindness is or what, you know, I'd worked with her. Oh man. When did that Han Solo movie come out? That's how I know the year. 2018, I had worked with her. I had MC'd for her, and I didn't know who she was. I knew, like, she was somebody that was touring, and I had seen her face before on, like, websites and stuff. And I was like, oh, she's, you know, and she did the pod. She did the pod back then. And she was cool as shit, and I had a good time working with her. I didn't think anything of it. And then a year later, I was going to go to the Williamstown Theater Festival. I had a ticket. And then the club reached out to me and were like, hey, you know, Taylor Tomlinson requested you. And I think maybe they gave her a pool of people to pick from. But she said, yeah, any one of those would be good. But they said, hey, Taylor Tomlinson requested you to feature. Would you be interested? I was like, bet, I'll do it. Plus, I made some money. And I was like, yeah, of course. So I ate that ticket for that play. I ended up going, getting to the play. And it was cool. One of my homies texted me about, two of my friends, I dug the Carmichael special. And then somebody said, the hecklers are so eloquent. That's what I'm saying. He set it up in the way, and they weren't even really hecklers. They were just like people that were, they were invested in him, invested in his story, and were like, hey, well, what do you think? Like, do you think if this happened, X would happen? Do you think like this? And the way that he set the room up was in a way where those people felt like they could say something to him, because it came out of, like, genuine love and just respect for him. So that's kind of the thing that works, even though, like, cause you kind of give him I don't even say if you give him a curve, you kind of give him leeway on some of it not being as polished, but as a work of art, that just fucking works for that, for the context of that piece. So it just works. And it's almost like a night that'll never happen again. I'm sure he worked on it a few times. Like, one of my homies said, you know, he saw him at City Winery. So he was working it out. But that'll never happen again. That's like one of those magical moments, you know, that specials. It's fantastic. So Taylor Tomlinson requested me. We worked together, had a great time working with her. And she's always working and doing something new. And so I just respect that. She's always mining herself and dealing with her pain and turning it into income. You know, turning it into, what's Big Crit had? This is a rapper heavy podcast. Big Crit had this thing, and this podcast is going to be longer than I thought it was going to be. Turn my anger into green. You could call me Bill Bixby, I think. which is a play on Incredible Hulk. 12 for 12. He had this mixtape called 12 for 12 that came out in 2016. And there's a record called 4 p.m. at the Kappa. Do they have the lyrics? They do. I'm coughing, sorry. And sometimes some of these mixtapes, when these rappers 4 p.m. at the Kappa freestyle. Let me see if I can find the line. I'm sorry. I'm just going to try to find this shit. Just bear with me. Turn anger into green. You can call me Bill Bixby. Hulk with the grind and the hustle's incredible. Order the expensive bottle even if it's terrible. Deadstock J's I'm wearing, they ain't even wearable. The rhymes, yeah, nigga, man. And this is the genius annotation, and it says it's unreviewed, but it says, shout out to the actor from the OG TV show and the comic book titled The Incredible Hulk. Beside all the power and strength images, lighting up the green is his preferred way to calm down, alluding to his color and him having a secret to be cool when he's actually angry at all times. Yeah, but like, and then like turning anger into green is money. Like you turn your pain, and some of my like best bits that I've done come through like something bad that happened to me or a failure. You know, like, yeah. And it's cathartic in a lot of ways. So I really like those are two of my favorites that I've seen so far. I've seen a handful of specials. But I do recommend, I'd recommend Rothaniel. I recommend Taylor Tomlinson's Look at You. Happy for Gerard. I don't know him, but for him to come out and for him to, you know, put that in his work and just to talk about his family in a way that he just masterful shit. Masterful shit. And Taylor just like, Jesus, she's fucking, wow. Wow. That's she's tearing it up, man. So I like those two projects. And I am going to I'm gonna do Three Guys On this afternoon, and I'm gonna work on a musical audition. So with that being said, and I'm going to see Chris Rock tonight, and Patreon folks, I'll talk about it there. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this little old pod of mine. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I will talk to you next time. Take it easy.